Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Thursday, September 4th.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. In this program, we'll talk with our panelists, including Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from AgriView in Morton, Illinois, Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, and our special guest today, Angie McGuire, the Vice President of Grain for Citizens, a grain elevator system out of Charlotte, Michigan.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rimmed. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin in normal fashion. Matt Bennett, your list of items to cover today.
Well, I think a lot of people, of course, are talking about multi-year sales and whether it's just next year or maybe selling a little dab yet on into 16, and I think that's something we might want to discuss a little bit. And then, for a producer that maybe is in a situation that, they're not exactly sure what they want to do, if nothing else, we've been trying to get guys to lock basis in, especially right here in central Illinois where we feel production's going to be a little bit bigger than anything we've seen before. So those would probably be two topics I'd want to discuss.
Happy birthday, by the way. Ellen Dearden, how about you?
I think we need to be talking about the U.S. dollar. Certainly what Europe's central bankers did this morning in lowering rates reflected a lot of strength to our dollar, and that's hurtful for exports of U.S. goods.
And Dan Zwicker, how about you?
I don't know if I want, there's a lot to add other than if the crop is as big as what F.C. Stone pumped out here earlier in the week, we're definitely in the soup of fairly large any stocks levels for a couple years.
And finally, Angie McGuire, who is the Vice President of Grain for Citizens at their Charlotte, Michigan office. And for those of you who follow Twitter, you'll know her at Goddess of Grain on Twitter. Nice handle, by the way, Angie.
Very tongue-in-cheek, but I'll take it. I, being a cash trader, and we were just talking about basis here ahead of getting started, so just basis outlook, problem areas, regular areas, and then your oddities, the odd areas that you'll see kind of in the variance in that out there is kind of what I wrote down.
All right, fantastic. Okay, Matt, so let's start with you on these multi-year sales. And anybody can jump in on this one because it would be rare for people to think about making a 15 sale at this time. It would be even more rare to consider a 16 sale. And are we talking about corn, soybeans, or both, Matt?
You know, I'd probably be a little more likely to step in and sell beans. I think whenever you look, at the way the market's set up, obviously, especially, the way the weather's been here towards the end of the growing season, it looks as though production is going to be excellent. And then, talking about South Americans obviously producing a few more beans again this year, whenever you look at the NOVA 16, it's actually still a shade over $10. And so, if nothing else, just a straight up hedge might not be a bad idea. When you look at NOVA 15, you're 10.19 and three quarters. To me, if nothing else, as a producer who's looking to raise a fair amount of beans, I would be wanting to step in and hedge my insurance price, if nothing else, because I happen to think that no 15 beans, it's going to be tough for me to paint a picture in which they're going to rally a whole lot.
I've got to hear more on this from other people. Ellen Dearden, do you think this is an okay idea?
Well, we've got basically the same price for no 14, 15, 16, and then drops off under $10 on the November 17. I don't have any qualms with selling November 15 beans. There's enough open interest there at about 4,300 contracts, but you sure can't do it with futures looking at 16 or 17 when they've got fewer than 100 open contracts.
I also wondered what you think about that because you mentioned the U.S. dollar, and sometimes longer term that becomes a tricky portion of this making sales, especially further out. What was your discussion point on the U.S. dollar, and can you put that into perspective with longer-term sales?
I think just longer-term, looking at the dollar, we've been in a pretty wide trading range, kind of a pennant trading range on this dollar, and it looks to me like we had a little upside breakout that ought to take us up and take at least another look at the high that we made a year ago. That probably could be completed actually this winter. It seems to me that the general pressure will be on the beans as we go into the 2016-2017 time frame, however.
Dan, you've been watching the pennant formation in the dollar. A stronger dollar also generally would mean lower exports for corn and soybeans both. At least that's the general consensus.
Well, it makes it more difficult to sell. We're already having difficulty selling in the export market. There's cheaper inventory elsewhere around the world. And if you look at Argentina's balance sheets, I think they got about a third of a crop in storage. The farmers have been tight holders of their inventory. And I think the presidential candidate that might be leading down there, I guess, for president has indicated that they're considering maybe lifting the export tax. So if that would occur, that could bring in a lot of that could push out a lot of Argentina inventory that farmers have been basically hanging on to as an inflationary hedge. So looking at around the world, on the surface, I mean, you as long as you're assuming average weather, we're going to have difficulty selling grain as it is, let alone with the stronger dollar.
Hey, Angie, here in our part of the world, we're blessed with the Mississippi and the Illinois, the Ohio rivers. We do have an export market pretty easily. You're a little further to the north up there. Do you look at envy down this way? And then maybe you can talk about how you see this global picture and the potential.
Yeah. Well, we're relatively fortunate in the respect that the Toledo market's actually a large export hub in the fall. So a lot of our beans will actually make their way into Toledo and end up on boats. We have shipped some into the Chicago market. And then the newest thing as of late with the increase in export is actually loading bulk containers right at the rail yards. So we, from an export standpoint, that's actually what really depleted the stocks here in Michigan early on last year, is the Toledo market was so aggressive for so long. Typically, you'll see that thing dry up and the bids really start to fade once you roll into the January, whereas last year we started trading significant overs over the Jan when bean harvest wrapped up and guys had stored their beans or locked their beans away. We were actually aggressive in selling. So from an export standpoint, here in Michigan, I mean, maybe we don't necessarily see as solid as a basis as what you may see out that way, but we have a market and an ability to kind of dump those at harvest time. And the Toledo market as of late has been aggressive. We've seen probably a 10 cent firm in their posted, and what they're posted and what they're actually paying are two very different things right now. And then we're fortunate too, we have a crusher over on the west side of the state in Claypool, Bungie, and ADM Fostoria. So we have several crushers just to the south that's kept bean demand strong. So we're fortunate in that, and I think in the beginning of harvest this year, we're going to see some pretty surprising basis moves actually take place, because you've got the crusher and the exporter competing right now pretty solidly for those early bean supplies. But from a long-term perspective, I am pushing the 15. If 14 is good enough at 10.04 futures on the November, 10.19 should be good. It's about the only thing out there that these guys know they can put black on their balance sheet going forward. On top of that, if they're going to increase their bean acres, I'll get a lot of guys that'll say, well, we're going to increase bean acres. Okay, well, you should be hedging more then to increase, because that's where the money's at, and then not defend your profit is risky. If they want to later on defend with some upside protection, that's not a bad idea. And even 16, everything that we just laid out here in conversation indicated that, you know, if exports have been our big market boom, yes, crush will continue to grow with the expansion in livestock herds, and obviously our soybean meal exports are good. But if the Argentina farmer starts dumping supplies, Argentina is pretty solidly a byproduct exporter. So that'll start to bite into our meal and perhaps slow down demand overall. So if you can say it'll be difficult to put export sales on and things like that with the increase in the dollar, then it would definitely make sense to also be hedging 16. Now, with the slow interest, what we do is you don't go to the market with an order on NOV 16, you'll get hosed. You put in a solid number on that and put an order out there. And what we've been doing is we charge X amount to put a hedge on, and then we just put the order out, and 9 times out of 10, as long as it's within 5 cents of where the market's trading at that point in time, we're getting filled. So we are, albeit a bit slower because it's a long ways away, but we are locking in some 16 as well as 14 and 15 pretty solidly, still above $10.
Okay, so let me make sure. So I know that I've got Matt and Angie both that are willing to make bean sales 15 and 16, and everybody. Is everybody okay with 14 and 15 bean sales at this point? Is that right, Ellen and Dan?
Well, it's a lot of that's easier said than done.
Yeah, you know, well, here's what I'm driving at, Dan, is as I've got the four of you, and maybe you're not quite there, and then I had three last night at the Farm Credit, so Steve Freed, Jackie Vakes, and Bill Gentry, and I've got everybody telling me maybe the same thing, and that always makes me really leery.
Well, I'd tell everybody that's advising farmers 15-16 crop, will you finance me through margin calls if something happens around the world? I mean, when you start talking about the amount of capital it takes to hedge in 15-16 crop, and if you're just going to piddle around with 15 or 20%, it ain't even going to make a dent in the situation. I mean, if you're going to start hedging, you've got to start swinging some pretty big numbers, 50-60-70% around, or otherwise you're just piddling in the market. So, and then your grain companies, I don't know what their policy is, but most of them are going to be pretty reluctant to go out more than 12 months. I think they will probably go, they'll do some 15, but they're probably going to put some ropes on you. They're not going to let you go real aggressive on the 15, and I don't even think they'll even talk to you about 16. Because they're going to be responsible for those hedges. And after the experience that everybody went through back in 08 and 07, it's going to be – so all of this talk about, you know, distant crops is fine, but you better have pretty good financing behind you, or they're just, you know, market advisory services can advise that, but they're basically a paper trade because very few farmers can really afford to finance that kind of stuff.
Just to be clear on my end, we're writing HTAs. So, and I, after 07 and 08, our relationship with our bank is such where they understand the margin calls and the philosophy behind it. And with the guys that we trust and with basically a master trade agreement, we have no concern in writing HTAs for a fee for 15 and 16 and margining that position for them. So, I mean,
you got collateral? You got collateral on that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you got, so someone's going to have to margin their farm. They're going to have to margin their farm. So that's, like I said, not very many farmers are going to want to margin their farm for margin calls, I don't believe.
Yeah, and then you have the HTAs, but then you have the complicating factor, I think, Ellen and Matt, and you'll probably understand this. In November, there is a change coming for you and how much margin money has to be available and how quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in November, you've got to have margin money within 24 hours and the whole amount, if I remember correctly. So these are going to be difficult things to do, I would think. I think
no doubt about it. I think the thing that's important for me is, as far as looking at this, we started hedging 15 quite some time ago, and we actually hedged a little bit of 16. Now, we do it in a variety of ways. We've done HTAs as well, but you know, we've also done a few hybrid contracts, and depending on which contracts you enter into, some of those, I mean, most of them that we do, actually, whenever I was with TGM with AgriVisor, I mean, those don't have a margin. So, I mean, you're actually locking in a price basis the board with no margin, which those tools, if managed correctly, I mean, it's always a risk versus reward. Most of those products are. But if you manage the risk side of it, the reward can be even better than what it originally appeared to be. And so, you know, from my vantage point, looking at the glut of soybean production, I certainly would want to get protection on as much as I can moving forward. And I know that it's not always easy to do, but after 2012, a lot of producers that I deal with were able to secure financing loans, you know, for hedging that they'd never been able to. Now, it's going to be really interesting here in the next few months if the mindset changes a little bit as far as, you know, what banks are going to be willing to do, because obviously, you know, our profitability is going to be significantly different than it's been the last several years.
One of the items, Matt, that was on your list was about locking in the basis. Tell me more about that and what the risk involved with just locking the basis in might be and not doing anything else.
Well, you know, the bottom line, I've had several producers, well, I'm not real sure what I want to do. And, you know, most guys around here feel like they've got good production at the very least. And so, you know, I've said, hey, if nothing else, lock in your basis. And simply, you know, the last couple of weeks before this week, it certainly looked like we were kind of in a sideways pattern for a while. And so a lot of producers were feeling as though maybe the board wasn't going to, you know, fall out of bed. And I told them, you know, you may end up losing 20 to 30 cents on basis in the glut of harvest, because especially in this neck of the woods, you know, I have to feel we're going to have a really hard time getting through the, you know, the last third of harvest. I know there's a lot of trains from several different companies that have been booked to come in during harvest and get corn out of here, because it's going to be tough to chew through it. And I think whenever you get to that point, obviously basis is going to be something that is not going to be real pretty.
Dan, what are your downside objectives if that's the direction you're leaning at the moment for corn?
Well, I've been basically since the July 4th chart gap, after that three-day weekend, I've been kind of looking at that kind of as a measuring gap off of the April-May highs on corn. That was like 317 on D's corn. If that is a true measuring gap, then the downside price objective or vulnerability, at least in the near term, is a move down to the 308 level. I think if you look at your monthly charts and weekly charts, we could maybe slip all the way back to the point of breakout of this big bull market that began in 2006. A lot of times markets will fall back to the point of breakout to complete the cycle. And on a monthly chart, we basically broke out to the upside there in, I think it was October of 06 when we blew through 264. So I think, you know, 264 is a possibility on the downside if this crop is as big as FC Stone says it is. We don't have anything that'll basically support it. We don't have much of a loan rate. We don't have no grain reserve. So we're back to the mid 80s talking about market clearing levels. So the function of the market now is to go cheap enough to force the farmer to store it, find some kind of place to put it if he doesn't want to sell it. So I guess I'm a little reluctant about basis levels, because I do think they're Chicago's going to do what they can to send this thing as cheap as they can get it. So I think, you know, 310 is an automatic, and then we can probably dime another 40 cents is definitely, I think, in the cards. A lot of it will depend upon how quickly the harvest goes and whatnot. But It's a 14 and a half billion bushel corn crop is a lot of corn. The only good thing is that we're getting off to a slow start of harvest, so we have used up 500 million of it. So maybe things might not get quite as sloppy as it looked like maybe a month ago or so. But the seasonal here to move down, and I'm totally surprised how much grain is sold off the scales. The spot is still the biggest buyer of most grain companies. People just sell it right off the scale. That's still the biggest deal. I don't know if that's landowner corn or what that is. So we still have a lot of spot selling to go through. So, you know, I think 310 and then 290 and then maybe 260 on the corn.
Hey, Angie and Matt, can you confirm that since you're in the elevators spot? There's an awful lot of spot sales. And then I've got something I want to ask Dan to follow up to.
Yeah, I would say we've got more spot sales than a person could believe. And you know, actually this year, as far as the percentage for TGM of producers who've sold ahead of time is very low. It's a little bit scary how low it is. And so, you know, I would assume what Dan's saying is you know, is going to come to pass this year as well. There'll be a lot of people selling across the scale. And I think, you know, whenever you look at whether it be landowners or someone who's inherited a piece of ground, when you look at people who don't have maybe the land costs involved, and it's probably going to be a little easier with good yields, you know, just sell across the scale and realize, hey, I've still got maybe a little bit of net profit. I mean, albeit not a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, we see a decent amount of sold off the scale. I've got going into the spring, we had a lot more hedged this year than what we'd had the year prior. I'm not sure if that was my guys being more aggressive or if it's just been a growth in business. But there was a while there where I was a little concerned because the market kept trading higher and we had a pretty significant book on, and sometimes, you know, you get a feel that a big group of people may be on the wrong side of the market, and that was my concern, is that we'd been wrong to be aggressive early. But I wouldn't be surprised to see some spot sales. We give the guys, they have 10 days basically to do something before it is either converted to a DP contract or you know, they have to make a decision on whether or not they sell it. So probably similar. We saw a lot in wheat this year where the spot sales weren't as great as what they have been when wheat was above six or around seven. And I wonder if perhaps we won't see the same thing this year where there'll be a hang up where guys will just kind of bring it in, put it on hold, and wait that whole 10 days to see if they get something out of it. But yeah, I mean, it's the spot sales side of things. It's going to be interesting this fall for sure.
Ellen, I want you to take up the WASDE in just a minute, but I want to come back to Dan because I'm going to put you on the spot, Dan. Giddy up is gone, at least for the moment.
Giddy up on the downside.
So I have to ask because I get asked a lot. And, you know, I knew that you were, and I'm sure you knew too, that you were riding that horse up one way or the other. But what was it that you saw to begin with that put you in that bullish mode earlier in the year?
Well, I go back and look at my stuff, and if you heard me speak at any of the outlooks in that, I was basically friendly into May. I had the timing right. I thought we would see more of a retracement back of the 13 decline than this 517, 520 area. I was looking more at something maybe up into the 540, 550 area. And it just, you know, there just wasn't enough juice to get up there. Chicago had it in their mind that they wanted to sell the May crop report, and they got away with it. And the weather went their way from that point forward. You know, the crop just kept getting bigger. But what I was looking at is more of 13 or 14 here having a little better recovery rally than it did, and then a fall out of bed as we go on into 15, and obviously it just didn't.
I thought since I had you, I probably ought to clear some of that up because you get, I'm sure you get asked too. But I know you knew and I knew at the end we were just riding, you were riding that horse up sometimes that's the way it goes. Okay, Ellen, when we look forward to September, we have a WASDE report and we have a grain stocks report, both due out. We have some awfully big numbers this week from FC Stone. USDA at 167.4, I think, for the national yield for corn. Will it go up? If so, by how much? And I know there's at least a couple of folks out there somewhere that have a number that's right about where we are now or even lower.
Yeah, on the corn side at least, Todd, this report next Thursday, the 11th, will show a higher corn yield. Now, keep in mind that there will not be changes made to acreage likely. So my guess is that USDA will come in with a relatively high number, and I'm talking about being up about 7 bushels from where they were before, about the 174 level. I don't know how they're going to deal with acreage on this report. I imagine no changes, which means large acres, large planted acres, large harvested acres, and large yield on the corn side of things. Beans, to me, is still a wide-open guess. You know, we've got large acreage, probably not much change there in acreage even as we go into the end of the year. But, you know, are they going to really come out with a number that's in that 47, 48 range? There's talk of numbers that big with the uncertainty of the disease issues that particularly are showing up in the Western Corn Belt.
Wow, a 7 bushel jump. That would be big. I talked to Emerson.
That would be huge.
That would be really big. Anybody else in that boat where we could jump that much?
I don't know that I'm in that kind of boat, but I will say this. Whenever we've got the acreage that we've got for beans, you get up to 44 or 45 bushel beans, and you've still got a drastically different situation than what we've had the last few years. We could kind of see this coming in. I think after the acreage report, most people looked up and said, hey, we don't need a huge crop. And so and then we turn around and we have what I would say is pretty much what the doctor ordered for a lot of people late in the season, and that we've been able to catch some moisture. I know a few people have had too much. We are talking about some disease issues, but whenever you're looking at guys that are looking at beans that say they're going to, you know, make 10 bushel better than what they've had before, I think we need to understand that, you know, it's a pretty good sized bean crop, and I certainly don't look for the USDA to lower the bean crop any.
Yeah, Ellen, by the way, Emerson Nafziger is with you, at least in the state of Illinois. We're at 188 at the moment, and when I talked to him earlier in the week, he said if it doesn't go 195 or better for the state of Illinois, it would surprise him. And I guess we're the big horse in the race this year. It sure looks like that to me.
Well, really, the only state that I am projecting a lower corn yield than what USDA put out a month ago is Minnesota. And, yeah, it's the number 5 producing corn state. But that, you know, when you've got 1, 2, 3, and 4 all projected higher, at least in my mind, I think it's going to be really difficult not to come in with a big yield. And let me just say that Emerson, I think, is right on board at that 194, 195 range for Illinois.
What's Michigan look like?
Not as good as a year ago. The USDA is forecasting a 5 to 6 bushel to the acre increase, and I struggle with that. I really do. We had a lot more delays. We had some real issues, and then we dried out in a few spots, and there's been a lot of end loss. I mean, yield estimates look good. You know, when you go out and walk past the end rows and pull ears and do things like that, your yield numbers look good, but when you get above it and see the holes and the yellow and the different issues that have developed, I'll be interested to see. I mean, we're going to have a big crop, don't get me wrong. It looks good. I can't say it looks poor, but I don't think it looks better than a year ago. Last year was almost picture perfect. It was like Illinois this year, but for Michigan style, where it was just the temperatures were good, It was warm when we needed it to be warm, and it rained when we needed it to rain. And we just quietly sat up here and produced what was a record crop for a lot of my guys. This year I struggle that we'll see something that good. Beans look good where they were planted. This year, actually, earlier planted beans did better than the later planted ones because we had a lot of rainfall last half May. So the spots where the beans got put in early and filled in nicely and weren't drowned out, I mean, we're putting pods on, and if we can make it without any sort of solid frost event between now and the end of the month, we'll have a pretty decent bean crop, I would say, too.
Dan, you're down there for the Eagle's Nest looking out for the exports for corn and soybeans. Can we manage more than 1.7 billion bushels for corn in 2014-15 on the export market?
Right now, it looks like that could be a struggle, but lower prices, you don't know. It could be as low as 1.5 on the corn. There's a lot of inventory around the world, so it could be a struggle. Soybeans, we've got a good book on for new crop, and you know we've got some leftovers from the last year. So demand for soybeans from the exporter is going to be pretty strong. So that's why I think those basis levels will probably stay pretty strong on soybeans, both from the exporter point of view and from the processor. But I was just looking at the new 6 to 10 day weather forecast, and it's a fairly deep blue right in the center of the country all the way down into Oklahoma. So I don't know if that is indicating potential frost early next week or not. We'll have to see how that goes. Weather guys have always told me that it's very difficult to predict frost. It just shows up the night before, and there it is. So we'll have to see. But it's a very deep blue, and it goes all the way down into Oklahoma. So that could be an interesting event next week.
Could be, but we need to freeze, what, down to 28 degrees for 2-4 hours or something like that to really do damage, don't we?
Well, this is pretty deep blue if you look at it.
You're still trying to ride a horse up, aren't you?
You never know. I tell you what, things are pretty damn bearish.
Well, I talked to enough of you that it's pretty bearish. But there's an awful big crop out there, and it looks like there's an awful big soybean crop out there, too. So we've talked about soybeans quite a bit in terms of marketing. Where does everybody think we should be on corn at this time? And, Matt, why don't you start on this one?
Well, you know, as far as corn goes, I hate to be one of these guys, but we were, pretty aggressive sellers early on as well, as far as the guys that I directly work with. I was similar to Angie in that earlier in the spring, you know, I was advocating some sales, and then we were selling on the way up. Some of the earlier sales, you know, I had guys saying, man, I wish I wouldn't have sold 420, 425 corn. And, you know, some of those guys now are saying, man, I wish I'd have sold more 425 corn. And so, you know, we were selling pretty aggressively early on. Now, I think a lot of it depends on exactly where you're at. You know, what's your situation as far as what percentage sales are you? Because a guy that hasn't sold anything yet obviously is in a completely different situation than someone who's hit 50, 60% of his crop or even a quarter of his crop. And so, you know, I would say furthering sales right here is probably going to be a little bit dependent upon what your yields look like, because obviously with this drastic reduction in price, if you don't have a significantly higher than your APH yield, you know, insurance might come into play, and so you might want to go ahead and hold off a little bit on how you're looking at that. But, you know, as bearish as what some of these counts Dan's given, you know, and I'm not disagreeing with him whatsoever, I still think a guy ought to probably go ahead and sell some corn. But, again, it just depends on his given situation.
How about you, Angie?
Oh, I hate corn right now. I really do. I've been thinking it's got to stop going lower at some point, right? Like, it's in the basement, and then it goes down another leg, and I cry a little. So, I mean, when it comes down to it, maybe this means that we are getting towards the low, because I'm finally throwing in the towel and saying to heck with it. You know, it's one of those things where, for 15, I think we've got time. I'm not in a big hurry on 15. We've got target orders standing. to put some HTAs on in the 410 to 425 range and then scale up. You know, I think there may be something that could develop to kind of get some juice flowing later on. So what we've been doing with a lot of the guys is if they have to move at harvest, we've been looking at doing cash sales, locking in the bottom, and then looking at covering the upside with some cheaper options on that side of things just to, like I said, at least that way you can guarantee you've got the bottom locked in. It's the only way to really do that. But for the deferred stuff that they can put in the bin, et cetera, we're kind of sitting back. I think there's going to be some cash marketing opportunities, some basis swings that'll surprise some people and catch a lot of folks off guard. The carry in the market makes it reasonably decent to look at holding on to it too if they've got the storage. So depending on the position they're in, you know, we've seen we're it's very situational, but if they do have to move right at harvest, we are looking, or we have been looking for quite some time now, at doing some cash sales, maybe looking at protecting the upside, that side of things, just to make sure they not only do they have the ability to deliver, but they also know what they're looking at cash flow wise.
And Ellen Dearden on corn.
The biggest issue that I have is we thought we were 50 or 60% sold in the springtime period, and that's probably 35 to 45% sold now. And some of those same fellas are saying now that I don't have enough storage on farm. My elevator storage rates have gone up, so I'm going to have to move it across the scales. And that is the, I think, has got to be just the bite the bullet deal. Like Matt, we pushed basis part, getting the basis sold in the last couple of weeks on those kinds of sales. And I'm going to be a willing holder of a portion of this crop just because I think the basis will come back and there's plenty of carry to sell.
Any word from you on this one, Dan?
Well, this is what always gets market advisors in trouble. When you're down here in the last fighting for the last 50 cents on corn and the last dollar and a half on beans, or maybe 75 cents on corn. But I mean, unless you can mix up the supply demand table in a significant way, this market still has downside price risk. And I think there's still possibly some put option type positions you can put on to protect you from that. I do think that we are looking at some of the probably the biggest production numbers, because I do think USDA is going to have to whack the acres pretty hard in October. I think it shows up at last year's corn crop. I think their acres are way too high. That's why this feed and residual use is unusually large. You can explain some of it moving back into last year's crop year, but I think USDA was way high on their corn acres last year, and I think they're way high this year. And eventually they're going to have to get it straightened out. And I think there's less bean acres out there, too. So we are looking at some of the biggest production numbers now. And then when USDA gets done changing their acres in October, and then maybe again in November and even in January, maybe the supply will be a lot tighter.
I suppose it is finally time to get a final word from each of you. Matt Bennett, why don't we start with you? It's your birthday. Happy birthday, by the way, again, from Channel Seeds, located there in Windsor, Illinois.
Well, I think, obviously, there's a lot of bearishness going on right now with some of the yield projections. And going into the harvest, I think that it's pretty tough, you know, looking at these sort of production levels, it's pretty tough, as Dan said, really to talk about selling opportunities down in these areas. But, you know, I guess the only bullish thing I would bring out is that you know, after the first year, I as well think we could see maybe some sort of a rally in the corn market. I think even if we end up with a 2 billion carryout, we need to realize that last year at this time people were talking a 2 billion carryout for this year, and we ended up 118. So obviously our demand is very strong, And I think that when we start talking acreage next year, we're going to understand that we're going to have some sort of a decent-sized crop pretty much every year because this world is going to demand that we be able to feed an increasing population. So that would probably be the one little hint of bullishness in my shtick today, if you will. But for the most part, I think guys need to be locking in some of their levels if they haven't done so, especially on soybeans. And I would definitely be willing to do that more than just this year and next.
Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
Well, I'm going to continue to watch the dollar, and like Dan, I think that we have curbed our export business tremendously in the corn because of that. And I'm going to be watching South America very carefully to see whether indeed we see corn acres drop dramatically, because that could be the beginning of an upside move in corn futures.
We always go in alphabetical order. So Angie McGuire, Vice President of Grain for Citizens out of Charlotte, Michigan, you're up next.
Oh, I guess the biggest thing is don't bury your head in the sand. I've had a lot of guys that have done that, and it's only gotten worse over the last 60 days or so for most of them, where it's just like, okay, well, it'll get better. I'm just going to go ahead and ignore what's going on. So the biggest piece of advice I have is basically be aware of what you're looking at. If your hedges, if you're not sitting in a place where you have enough sold, start to plan on making proper arrangements and making decisions on what you need to do and be aggressive here in the short term. I think over the next 3 to 4 weeks will be when a lot of these guys have some really surprising opportunities. The last thing you want to have is empty space as an elevator. And if guys are filling their home bins and not a lot of grains moving and there's trains to load and things of that nature to be done, there's going to be some surprising basis opportunities, but those are going to be gone by the time harvest is wrapping up. So if you deliver everything you have contracted, fill your bins, and then go to look to market your overage, you're probably going to really regret doing it that way. So look to market your overage before it is necessarily overage, and just be aware of when it's a good time to sell. And most of the time, it's going to be a good time to sell when no one else is. So a lot of what we'll be looking at here after harvest, we'll be looking for basis opportunities, Dec, Jan, Feb, and deferred, similar to what we saw a year ago. We were more than comfortable stock-wise, but you saw some really solid basis moves early on. So we're going to be looking to be aggressive on locking in basis once harvest is wrapped up and the bin doors are locked, and then hopefully able to capture a burst in futures that, you know, everyone seems to think we'll see after January time frame. But for now, it's going to be pretty boring. We're going to wait and see what comes in crop-wise, if it's anywhere near the estimates, and then we'll start trading real bushels after November into December and January. And as a cash trader, I can't wait. I hate August and September. It's all hypothetical. It's all pretend trade with imaginary numbers and hypothetical situations. And we need a Barbie and a tractor, and I'd be able to basically just do my job that way, because it's just kind of pretend right now. So I'm looking forward to actually having something tangible to trade.
And Dan Zwicker at CGB in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Texas A&M's quarterback, Kenny Hill, is going to win the Heisman Trophy this year. His nickname is Kenny Trill, which means true and real.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Our special guest was Angie McGuire today from Citizens. She's in Charlotte, Michigan. Our other panelists included Matt Bennett at Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. He's located in the TGM elevator there. And Ellen Dearden from AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, and that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week for the fourth day of September.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.